Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Hey everyone, I'm Maggie McGrath, a staff writer at Forbes magazine and your new host for a show called Forbes on Trump.
Politicians are all talk, no action.
I'll be speaking with the editors and writers who are reporting on the 45th president. We'll hear what they're finding out about his wealth, his business associates, and the ways in which he and his policies are affecting the economy, consumers, and all aspects of the business world.
Somebody has to come out and tell it like it is.
Along the way, we'll dive into Forbes archives, which contain decades of information that will add context to the current White House administration.
So listen to this. Listen to this.
That's Forbes on Trump on Podcast One.
Subscribe now at iTunes, and don't forget to rate, review, and share.
Hi, I'm Howard Mackler, one of the founders of RichUncles.com, real estate investing for everyone. Our $1 billion offering is now open for investment with a $500 minimum. RichUncles NNN REIT is a public non-listed REIT, a real estate investment trust that invests in single-tenant commercial real estate. Learn more by reading our prospectus at RichUncles.com. That's RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by RichUncles for this single message and is intended only for residents in states where the offering is approved.
RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on Monday. Get on. Welcome to Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in the flesh.
I'm in the studio. I haven't seen you in, it seems like, a month.
Too long, my friend.
You're now a TV star. You've become a TV star in the 1 month I've been on the road.
Let me give you a sad testimonial.
Okay.
If I show up to work wearing jeans and a shirt with buttons on it, everyone wants to know where I'm going.
I asked that. Didn't I just ask that? I asked that as Adam
you
sat
asked
down.
It,
I said, why are y'all gussied up? Because he's got a shirt on with a collar.
Yes. And I am going to Dr. Drew's house to go shoot a bit for Adam Carolla and Friends Build Stuff Live.
And what is Drew going to build?
Drew is redoing his pool house, amongst other things. I think he wants to work on a studio inside of his house.
The pool house where Susan has the clairvoyance read, which she has part of the psychics there.
Yeah, that's an interesting. It's an interesting thing, and we should dip into that. By the way, 10 o'clock on Spike Tuesday nights, if you'd like to enjoy the show.
And which I was just saying, and that it's got quite a buzz about it. I've noticed that from my Twitter feed.
I will say, I don't know why a studio or a network bothers with audience testing anymore. You just go to your Twitter feed.
And you can figure it out immediately.
I wish it wasn't obviously throw out the 2% at the bottom that says fuck off and die.
Right.
I hate everything you do. And then the 2% at the top that says you can do no wrong.
Wrong, right.
And then focus on the middle.
Right.
And, you know, people talk about, I had this talk with Lynette the other night where the guy's like, oh, there's a lot of trolls, a lot of haters, but not really. What you can do.
God, that's so true. I had this argument last week with somebody. I said, they kept saying, yeah, the internet trolls. I said, no, yes, you're always going to have psychos, but I have psychos walking down the street. That
right.
There really is a pretty good cross section.
If you do a show and, you know, oh, you got out of the gate a little slow, and maybe you seemed off balance or nervous or something, but you started to hit your flow, and by the end, it hit its stride.
Right.
You'll then go home, and you'll read 100 tweets that said, looked a little shaky at the start, but seemed like you got your rhythm at the end, and you'll
got his sea legs.
And you'll just go, that's right.
Right.
That's what it felt like. That's what happened.
No, it's perfect. Every time I would do an appearance on CNN, you could tell whether or not, I mean, obviously, because when it gets politicized, you know, there's going to be, you can discount that from whoever's prism they're looking through. But you can tell either you hit the mark, you don't hit the mark, and you make it. I would think the same thing for Build Stuff Live, because that's exactly what I saw on the Twitter feed when it was going on live.
Well, again, that's your new sort of instant response and audience reaction. So now Mark was New York, then Mark was in Miami.
Then Rhode Island.
Then Rhode Island.
Back to, now I'm back in L.A. at least temporarily. But interestingly for us, for Reasonable Doubt, have you talked about on ACS, because I haven't had a chance to listen to ACS in the last week, have you talked about the Russiagate and the hearings in the Senate this week? Or
no.
The House hearings?
No.
Okay. So bring the listeners up to speed. What's happening now is, so that there's some background on it, you've got the head of the House Intelligence Committee, which some people say is an oxymoron, but Nunes, who's a California congressman, who went to the White House, and that was kind of a big to-do. But what people didn't understand is at the White House, they have, when you have to look at classified information, you have to do it in what's called a SCIF, which is a special compartmentalized intelligence room, so that it's blocked off. A SCIF, what they call it, is when you view classified information, there are locations you can go to. You can go to the Department of Justice. I think Congress has got a SCIF there.
It's like the cone of silence.
It's literally the cone of silence.
And so, like, when people wanted to look at certain redacted elements of the 9/11 report that, like, that basically inferred
the Saudis,
they had to go into the SCIF and look at it there.
And look at it there. Because, first of all, you've got to have a classified security clearance. And this is a fight I've had in a number of cases. I always feel like, from my standpoint as a defense lawyer, when they tell me that I have to, like I had a case about 10 years ago in San Diego where the co-defendant, the guy who was charged with my client, was the number three guy in the CIA. And so my client was charged with having a sweetheart deal with the number three guy at the CIA who ran the CIA. A guy by the name of Dusty Fogo. And Dusty was indicted along with my client. And they wanted me to get a security clearance so I could go and view all of the stuff in the SCIF. And I kept saying, I don't want to do that. And the judge said, why? And I said, well, there's something wrong with when my client's being prosecuted by the Department of Justice, that the Department of Justice has to then vet me. I said, if the U.S. attorney wants to come over to my office and let me vet him, then I'll submit to them vetting me. But I don't buy into the unilateral. What ended up happening in that case was they went to the judge without telling me, ex parte, which is the Latin term, and got him to order me to get a security clearance or remove me from the case. And I said, and he ordered me to get a security clearance. I said I wasn't going to do it, and I was removed from the case. But before they got to the Court of Appeal, the government dismissed that case as against my client because they didn't want to make bad law. I think they probably would have said, when you have a tension between a guy, and my client said, I want Mr. Garrigus. I don't want any other lawyer. He knows the case. He knows my other case, because there was a political campaign bribery aspect or a separate thing. But this is a long way to go to say that when you get classified information, you have to be very careful about what you say. So now, fast forward to now, Nunes says that he goes, this congressman who's a Republican, who's head of the committee, goes to the White House and he meets a source there who gives him information as to whether or not Trump was being wiretapped. So then all hell breaks loose.
By Obama.
By Obama, which we talked about before is ludicrous. But the if it's shorthand for the Obama administration, I get it. That makes sense. But it's not going to be ordered by the president, because the president doesn't order wiretaps. You have to go and you get a judge and the judge orders it. And there's something called the FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And that's done in an ex parte star chamber type proceeding. So that blows up. The House blows up. But today, as we're taping this, the Senate has, in an unbelievable bipartisan way, has come up with a hearing that is starting, and they're looking into the connections here, which we also talked about. In fact, you may have noticed that about a week and a half ago, there was headlines about how Flynn, there was a CNN commentator had said that Flynn may be cooperating. And you and I talked about this 4 weeks ago on Reasonable Doubt. We said, look, he obviously stepped down because they knew, because they'd intercepted his conversation with the Russian ambassador. Because the Russian ambassador is always going to be eavesdropped on. That's just standard operating procedure.
Right.
We eavesdrop on them, they eavesdrop on us. Obviously, what Flynn told somebody happened, whether it was Pence or anybody else, was probably belied by what they knew. And the handsome woman, as you called Sally Yates,
yes,
went to
is.
The White House.
Very long neck.
Yes, very regal.
Regal.
A regal neck.
Regal.
Yes. She went to the White House, I think probably disclosed that stuff. She has been told now that she is not allowed to. I mean, they're invoking executive privilege as to whether she can discuss what she told them. I think that's a losing argument. But inevitably, what's going to happen, I think, is if what I suspect is happening, that Flynn is cooperating because Flynn gave false information, apparently. If he's cooperating, then who could he be cooperating on? Could he be cooperating on Manafort? I suppose so.
Well, so I don't pay much attention to almost anything anymore because our government seems like a couple that went through the world's worst divorce. And like divorce, there's a thousand different shades of divorce.
Right.
I mean, you hear people going, they're still good friends. As a matter of fact, when she remarried, he attended the wedding. You know,
right.
There's that.
Can you imagine? But by the way, can we call time out for 1 second?
Yes.
I want to see Paulette and I want to see Lynette do that. Yeah, I want to see. I want to be there when that
happens. We're in California. Maybe they'll marry each other. And then we'll just be there paying for the whole thing.
We'll be there paying for it and laughing to ourselves, saying, okay, we can hang out in our underwear and in a man cave somewhere.
So there's that. And then there's, you know, they're suing and there's a restraining order. And
and then allegations of, you know, abusing the children, because that's always de rigueur in a family law.
Yeah, allegations, right, of abusing. Right. Yeah. So because our government now seems like the latter, which is just allegations of child abuse and incest and neglect. And, you know, in the neglect charges, they went to an ARCO station and the guy ran in to get him some Mike and Ikes and bring him back out to the car. But the kids were left unattended
exactly.
in Brentwood in the car with the air conditioning running. For 91 seconds.
I was going to say for about 91 seconds. And that is exactly
right.
What
so
forms the basis for
I get to hear the CNN or the Fox talking head get up there and start talking about allegations of neglect and abuse. And I'm already tuned out because I know there wasn't any, as we know it, neglect or abuse, or as anyone would define it previously as neglect and abuse. So whatever's going on in Washington, all it seems to me is I mean, if I were to put in a nutshell, a couple things. I think everyone's a sore loser, but the Democrats are especially sore losers because the game was over in their mind. This guy was a joke. If you went to, I think the New York Times, you know, on election day had it like, you know, 83% to 17% something, you know, odds
for
Hillary Clinton.
The 538 was somewhere near there. I mean, 538, which accurately prognosticated 2012 and 2008 and was just way off in 2016.
So everyone's a sore loser, but you're especially sore when you figure the game's in hand. And so then that happened. So the Dems were especially sore. And then Trump did nothing to be conciliatory about it at all,
other than
rub their face in it.
I was going to say gasoline on the fire.
And then it just became an all-out Donnybrook. And now I don't know anything that comes out of any side anymore because it's the world's worst divorce. And so when you're talking to the 51-year-old woman who's had way too much work and she's screaming that man is a danger and all he is a guy who's a dentist who's worked in the community for 30 years and he has no police record and you're screaming he's a maniac, I don't believe that person. On the other hand, when that guy says she's a miserable shrew who hates her own children and hates her own reflection I'm not listening to him either.
Well, that's what that's a pretty good way of analyzing why I think it's so unusual to see the two heads on this Senate Intelligence Committee are Senator Burr and then Senator Warner. I think it's Mark Warner. Warner's the Democrat, Burr is the Republican. And they were out yesterday seemingly getting along fine, saying we're going to go wherever the evidence finds us. I have a theory on this also. I wish I could say it was kumbaya, but I think first you're going to read some business.
I am. And then Paul Bryan's on the line, too, because there's a class action lawsuit that he's involved with that we want to talk about. I'll tell you first about Simply Safe. Ah, protecting your home should be easy. It wasn't in the past. Now it is. In the past, it was like installation, appointments, drilling holes, getting locked into contracts. Simply Safe, two eyes, comprehensive, professionally monitored, home security online. I have it. Dawson has it. Mike August has it. Each system is a security arsenal. Entry and motion detectors, sensors, high-def security cameras, everything you need to keep your family safe. It's easy. And again, if you live on a house that's on a slab or you don't have crawl space in the attic, good luck pulling those wires.
Right.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. Exactly.
CNET called it comprehensive, easy to use protection and named it Editor's Choice for Home Security in 2014. So how bad can it be, people? Order today. Get protection by the end of the week. Get 10% off right now when you go to simplysafeadam.com. That's simplysafeadam.com. Get you 10% off. Bald Bryan is involved with a very provocative lawsuit. Bald Bryan, let's see, is he potted up? I punched him. Bryan? Huh. See if we can. Gary's going to push something on the board, I think. Bryan,
hello. There we go.
Yeah. Hey, man.
The best hour of the week.
Yeah,
it is. Brian. Thank you. Brian, I have a question. We were tweeting at each other last week, I think. And
that was my assistant. That was my assistant you were talking to.
Okay, and then who said stick to lawyering? Was that you?
That was me. That was a joke because anytime anyone offers any opinion that is outside the very narrow realm of what they do, usually comedy, the response is, stick to jokes or stick to comedy.
Right.
My joke to you was, stick to lawyering.
Which, and by the way, I was lawyering at the time, but I think there was a substantial number of people who follow you and me who didn't understand that.
Oh, there's a substantial number of people who don't get most of the snarky jokes. But it was sort of to draw the pretty of stick to what you're good at, when in fact Mark Errico is as good as a lot of things.
So let's talk about this lawsuit. I mean, we heard something about it on my show. It has to do with the DWP, I believe, and some billing. But tell us where we're at now.
Yeah, I think what happened was I called back. This must have been a year ago. I actually talked to you guys on this show about the LA DWP, the Department of Water and Power, slapped me and a whole bunch of people, I think a thousands of people, with huge water bills and all at once, and with the explanation being, oh, our metering wasn't working. Sorry about that. Here's what you actually owe us. And it was a huge bait and switch, as Mark and I have sort of talked about. And I think at the time I was like, what are my legal recourses here? And Mark's like, well, I got a small claims court and blah, blah, blah. And then fast forward to about a year from then, which is right about now, and Christy gets in the mail, because her name's on the account for the DWP. She says, oh, there's a class action lawsuit against the LADWP for people who've been screwed on their bills. And I remember that Mark and I talked like 2 weeks ago, and he had specifically brought up, oh, there might be a class action lawsuit. So I wanted to get advice from the guy who should stick to lawyering, what to do, and what basic for the listeners, what is a class action lawsuit? How should I or they get involved when the opportunity arises?
And it's spot on, because it's called Jones versus City of LA. And it's for only certain customers, but I think yours falls into it in looking at this. And it looks like they've settled it, and there's going to be deadlines, like a notice date of next month, April, and then the last day to submit a claims form is in June. The lawyers, by the way, make up to $19 million on this. I just read the fine print.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Brian, how do you – who contacted Christy and you?
I wish that I had the thing in front of me. I think it's a third party, but I'll investigate that and let you know.
Yeah, are you on the road, Brian?
I just saw my car in reverse, and I'm parked now, so we're good. Sorry, that was the backup beeper.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It looks like what they did was – and this is standard operating procedure. They hired a claims administrator. The claims administrator, if I had to guess, probably through discovery has got a list of all the DWP customers. Christie's name was on it, so it would go to her, and that's how they gave notice. The claims administrator, they put aside, I think, $3 million for them to be able to follow up with everybody. But, Brian, how much was yours? Do you remember how much it was total? The overcharge?
I'm going to give you a non-specific range. It was thousands of dollars. It was somewhere between 5 and 10.
Yeah, because I would drill down a little bit more. I don't know that you're going to make 5 or 10 back, and you still may want to opt out and go small claims. But I will take a look at this, and I'll give you some free legal advice off the air. But it looks like what they've done is the DWP conceded, that they were wrong, and they entered into the settlement, and that's going to try to give the money back or give you a credit on the bill that you've got going forward. I, on the other hand, am going to sue them separately once again for the other scam that they're now running this year, which is in 2017.
What is that scam?
Well, this scam is they then, when they overcharge you, then when you contest the overcharge, then they assess a security deposit that's like twice the amount of your monthly bill, and then they shut you off if you don't pay the security deposit. So basically they want to get yet another, you know, chunk of change out of you for having the pleasure of doing business in the city of Los Angeles.
We're getting greedy here in L.A. There's now latest thing where they're going to add a tax for cars now, and even a gasoline tax, and even electric cars are going to have to pay.
The gasoline tax, right. Well, which is why we should promo it right now, right, Gary? We've got a town hall, which we're going to do in downtown L.A., where we're going to give some voice to this.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a 10E, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said we're throwing a tilly, and we're going to do it in July, I think. I want to say the 20th, but Gary will correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes,
at tilly.
That's correct. Yeah.
So Brian, what is your next step, and what do they want you to do? This paperwork that was sent to you that said join our class action lawsuit. Did you join it? Did you fill it out and send it back? Is that what they wanted you to do?
We just got it, I think, literally yesterday or the day before. I'm going to say the day before, 2 days ago. We'll make some good pot out of this. Mark, I'll send you what we got, and we'll touch. Maybe we'll do it next week or something. You tell me what you think and what we should do.
Right. I've got it. You've got, so that you understand the deadline, June 5th is your drop-dead date to opt out if you don't want to be covered. Because if you get this and you don't what's called opt out of the class, then you're stuck with whatever the result is that was negotiated for the class.
But is there any if Brian worked in the shipbuilding industry and had mesothelioma,
right,
or whatever right, it was, and he had used an attorney and he thought he had a real payday here, then he might opt out of the class.
Exactly.
Action, right?
I did this.
But not in a situation like this.
No, this is...
You wouldn't opt out,
no,
would you?
No, I don't think so. This looks to me to be a pretty good settlement. I'll take a look at it. But it looks to be a pretty good settlement in terms of the dollars. And Judge Burrell, who I know and I've appeared in front of numerous times, is no soft touch. So he would not approve something, and he will literally dot all the I's and cross all the T's. I mean, he is a very thorough judge. If you sent to central casting for the kind of guy you'd want in a case like this, that would be him.
All right. So, Brian, this will be a to be continued. We'll keep people up to date on what's going on when more paperwork is reviewed. But it sounds so far like you need to fill it out and opt in to the class action.
Sounds good. Adam, I'll see you in an hour and a half. And Mark, I'll see you in my dream.
Yeah, thanks, Paul Bryan.
I love it. But first,
yes,
let me do one piece of business here, and it's very appropriate. LegalZoom.
Mm. Oh.
Approval rates for business loans are up. I know that because I just got one. And so is consumer confidence. And it's National Small Business Month at LegalZoom.com. They're giving you a free business startup kit. But time is running out to download yours. We did this, by the way, on one of my at the office, because you and I have talked. They're kind of the IKEA of the legal world. They have educational ebooks and LegalZoom discounts to save money setting up your business. So you can save thousands through LegalZoom's partner offers to help with financing, marketing, and operations. No obligation, just great tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they're dedicated to making life easier for business owners. Isn't that true, Gary?
Yes, it is. Right now, visit LegalZoom.com/startup during the final weeks of National Small Business Month to download your free business startup kit. But you've got to hurry. There's only a few days left to take advantage of this exclusive offer. That's LegalZoom.com/startup. LegalZoom.com/startup.
I think there's going to be more of these kinds of cases because I feel like, and I've always felt like, the government just does what the government would do if my head on all this stuff is people aren't really good or aren't really bad. They're just sort of put. I mean, well, like we were talking about with the tweets.
Right.
You can throw out the Mother Teresa's at the top and right. throw out the Charles Manson's at the bottom. And then what we have is a bunch of people in between who can sort of be influenced
right.
one way or the other. And what usually keeps almost everyone on the straight and narrow is competition, consequences, productivity, income, you know, things of that nature.
Right.
It's literally impossible or nearly impossible to say to somebody, look, you're just going to be the mayor of New Orleans. Right. And whatever you say kind of goes. And, you know, if a guy has a nice bistro and he wants to feed you there for free and there's a couple ladies and he'll send a couple ladies by and they'll help you relieve some tension and stuff.
The
guy'd like to open another restaurant, but he's having a little trouble with the permitting. But he'll give you, what do you make a year? $81,000 a year? How about he'll pay you in 1 year? What it takes to make it a year.
And
all you got to do is sign off on some of these permits and get. I don't know that many people that wouldn't start heading down that road.
Do you see this week? I think they indicted or filed criminal charges. They may not have been an indictment, but against, was it the city treasurer of Compton? Now, Compton is a challenged community in terms of their financing because their real property tax base is not fantastic. And somehow this treasurer was able, if you believe the charging papers that were filed by the prosecutor, and I think it was federally, skim off $3.7 million over a fairly short period of time.
Well, once again, you are making, you know, $75,000 a year, you're in charge of millions of dollars,
uh-huh.
and there's nobody really looking over your shoulder. I'll give you an example. But same with Department of Water and Power.
Same with the war on drugs, with the forfeitures and all the cash what happens with guys who get involved in the narco world.
I will give you a perfect example, I think, of this. I have known many, many guys who in their past life, going through college, whatever, before they got into their careers, were bartenders.
Right.
I have never met a bartender that either did not engage or know about firsthand just a little skimming off the till.
That was my father's old joke is the bartender saying, you know, putting one in his pocket, the owner's watching him, one in the till. Then he does two into his pocket and the owner says, hey, Charlie, what, we're not partners anymore?
Right. Well, it's, you know, look, it's a bottle of Jack Daniels costs, you know, a big bottle, you know, big pour, big handle pour, cost a restaurant, you know, $14.
Right.
They get, you know, they get 51 pours out of it and they charge $7 or $8 a pour. The guy's pouring it is doing the math. He's right. going, Jesus Christ, they're making $175 on every bottle
right.
we buy for $14.
What he doesn't understand is after you pay the workers' compensation insurance, after you in the city of L.A. have to pay $15 an hour, after the DWP overcharges you and then steals your money for the security deposit, after you've got to then pay the new BOE tax that's just gone in. And by the way, if you make an extra dollar, we've just decided we're going to state tax you on that as well.
Yeah. No, well, he doesn't want to know about any of that because it's not convenient for him or her.
Right.
But you tell me what percentage of guys behind the bar. Now they got all this fakakta stuff at the airport with the electronic measuring device. They put an ankle bracelet on your booze
on your
bottle.
Booze, exactly.
And all this crap. But before that, pretty damn easy to do this. Nobody could ever really account for how much came in.
No, it's impossible.
Right.
Because I've done the inventory.
Right, so,
it's impossible.
Okay. Now, here's the question. Are bartenders – now, these guys who are now my age, who were doing this when they were 23, are they bad people? Are they criminals? Were they bad people? And were they criminals? Or – were there no consequences and checks and balances to basically keep them from doing something that seemed very easy, seemed like everyone else was doing it?
Well, there's also the consequences. If you're pouring an extra drink or a strong pour for the customer, you're going to get tipped better.
Right.
And since you're making so little on an hourly basis as a bartender, you're thinking to yourself, well, obviously, there's an inherent tension here. I'm working for the guy who's paying me $10 an hour. Back when I was doing it, it was like two and a change. But this guy could give me a 10 or a 20 at the end of the night. So, you know, that pays for the entire shift.
And also, then from the bar owner's standpoint, since nobody can tell the difference between Grey Goose and Smirnoff, what's to stop him from dumping the Smirnoff into the Grey Goose
exactly.
bottle and doing that, which is another scam. All I'm saying is I don't walk around thinking people are good or bad. I think they're vulnerable and flexible.
Right. And I think that's true.
And I think when you want to push them one direction, this is my problem with too many government handouts and too much welfare and too much free cheese. Once you just get used to, once you're the bartender that goes, you know, five in the till and five in my pocket, once you get a year under your belt of doing that, hey, that's your job. Like, that's just part, that's routine now.
Exactly.
And if somebody came in and said, hey, look, it's not five for you, five for him, it's 10 for him, and whatever you get an hour for you, you get a year of that, and it's like, fuck this. I'm getting ripped off now.
Right.
You can get used to anything that favors you.
You'll get
you
used
can
to.
Get used to almost immediately, and that's just it. If there's a foot-long sub of life, and you're used to cutting it at the 10-inch mark, and you taking 10 inches and you handing 2 inches to your construction buddy, and you go a year of that, there is no going back
you
to 6 and 6.
You don't go back to 6 and 6, you hardly go to 8 and 4.
You are so right, because when you read up on the details of this story, the guy started off stealing $1,200. He did that several times over the course of a year. Then all of a sudden it went to 12,000, and then it was 20,000, and then over the course of 3 years, it's 3.7 million.
Is that
he was making 60 grand a year.
The reason.
Your scenario, exactly.
Thank you. The reason everybody gets busted, I mean, it's probably good that they get greedy, because I'm sure if they just said, I'm simply going to keep it at 1,200.
Right. Nobody would have picked up on it.
It'd be like the imitation game, which is the Germans will never know we broke the Enigma code. But if we get greedy and put it all out to all ships at sea to start avoiding the wolf pack, they're going to know.
They'll figure it out. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a chess game. But greed generally trumps. Greed is probably one of the most motivating or powerful emotions.
Yeah. So what do we do, and where are we at last time we talked with the minimum wage is and also quickly sanctuary cities. So the mayors are getting together. They're having conferences. Trump is saying, look, you either obey the law or you're not going to get any funding. The mayors are saying somehow we're going to get around this or we're going to force you to give us money. I feel like this thing is pretty straightforward, which is there's laws and you have to enforce the laws, whatever the laws are. And if you choose not, if you want to kind of go rogue and not enforce the law, you can do that. And we can't really stop you or force you or oblige you to enforce the law. But what we can do is hold back federal money that's coming your way.
This is why, and we discussed this briefly, and I have to drill down and get some of the facts on it. I think
Gary says yesterday Seattle filed a lawsuit seeking to have sanctuary cities. Is there? I am so perplexed and dumbfounded by this doing battle to create a sanctuary city thing. I can't wrap my mind around it. I get it. It's whatever Trump wants, we want something else. And I also get it, we want votes, but
you just put your finger on it. I mean, it's obviously the political battle is because of votes. I mean, that's what the position is. I don't quite get it because in the criminal defense world, which for the first 20 years of my practice is all I did, immigration consequences were always an issue. I mean, it was always an issue as to what was going to happen. In fact, there's a recent case, and when I say recent, the last couple of years, out of Kentucky, I believe, that the U.S. Supreme Court decided, which said that the criminal defense lawyer could be ineffective as a matter of law if you didn't understand the immigration consequences and if you didn't explain it to the client. What, you know, that you plead to this is an excludable offense, and an excludable offense means generally if it's moral turpitude, meaning if it shows you got bad character. So that means that you've got to understand that. Well, you know, young lawyers, you've got to ask the question, what's your immigration status? You know, are you green card holder? Are you a citizen? Are you a naturalized citizen? When did this take place? And then you've got to decide whether or not somebody, if there's a way to craft a plea that gets you around the immigration consequences. So we've got laws. They've always enforced the laws. Contrary to what people are saying, the Obama administration was no soft touch on deportation. I mean, they deported, and I have clients who were doing battle all 8 years over, you know, criminal convictions. And if you have a criminal conviction, the law is pretty well settled on the deportation aspects of that. If it's what's called an aggravated felony, and there's a list of aggravated felonies, and you'll always fight at the fringes as to what, you know, some new offense that nobody has decided yet. But if it's what's called an aggravated felony, you're on the first train to Clarksville, and it's not Arkansas, it's whatever country you came from. Then there's all kinds of other layers to it. But this idea that somehow that the federal government can't dictate to the states the immigration policy is nonsense. I mean, I don't see these lawsuits as having a whole lot of legs because by definition, the feds, they're one of their core functions. The core function is immigration and borders and letting people in and out.
Yeah. So let's think about that because I do get, I guess, something like gay marriage, legal. Let's say you take some hot button topics, they're political topics. So you take like gay marriage.
Right.
And you say, well, look, Hawaii and California want gay marriage and Arkansas and Nebraska don't. And then you think, well, how does this affect at a federal level? Like how does this really affect the whole country? And you go, I don't know. I guess if you want to go, you're gay and you want to get married, you go to Hawaii and you get married.
Right. And the feds will say, we've got an interest in it because of benefits and vesting and things of that nature.
Yeah, I get it. And now you got married in Honolulu and you want to move to Lincoln, Nebraska, right, and you want to start collecting benefits. And I get it, but I'm sort of like, I don't know. If they want to make it legal in California, let them make it legal. And then I think about, you know, marijuana stuff of that nature.
Marijuana is a great example for that because if you got, I mean, by the way, the part of this politically, which is so crazy, is that it used to be that the Republican or the right side of the aisle was always for smaller, downsizing federal government and leaving and states' rights. The whole right. states' rights sure. movement was a right, the rights kind of bailiwick. But
I get that. And I think everyone has, you know, I don't think there's a black and a white or left and a right. There's a, well, I'll know it when I hear it.
Right.
You know, because if Honolulu wanted to lower the age of consent to 9 years of age and have operate a motor vehicle at 7 and be able to buy liquor at 4.5, I would go, I would like the federal government to sort of jump in and go, no, here are the numbers.
Right.
We were going to have 16 for the age of consent or 18 for the age of 16 for the driver's license right. and 21 for the whatever. I think we can kind of agree that we don't want a state going rogue and
right.
just going, you know, a 9-year-old can buy cigarettes in
right.
our state.
And then I think there was a time recently, we discussed this or alluded to it, there was a time recently where there was the age of consent for females was at 14, which, you know, to my mind is a little on the low side.
I agree. And I think, in my mind, I like just sort of a universal age of consent. And part of the reason I like a universal age of consent is because I don't want to prosecute the guy who grew up in Hawaii where the age of consent was 14. And then he moves out to Louisiana yeah. and has sex with a 15-and-a-half-year-old and gets arrested because
right.
there's a different statute there. But I want to know, and I want to know what you think about this. I'll tease a little. When it comes to border security, literally the border of this country, I don't have a state-by-state approach to the border of the country. It's not the border of California or the border of Honolulu or the border of Colorado. It's people in this country we all share.
Which is a – and by the way, the country is defined. We are a republic, and a republic is comprised of, you know, the various states, and we give to the feds certain things. I mean, that's the constitutional structure. One of that is for national defense. Another is for border security, obviously. In fact, when we talk about this, I want to bring up Canada because it's interesting to me that nobody ever talks about this. We always talk about Mexico, but I want to talk about Canada for a second.
We'll do that as soon as I tell you about MedJet Assist, man.
Speaking of traveling, man,
basic safety nets like the Platinum credit card or travel insurance typically don't cover you if you're injured traveling someplace unsafe. MedJet Assist, world's most comprehensive membership available for health, safety, and security when you travel, so you can avoid the costly fees and fine print restrictions on medical care or crisis response.
They've also got the they have like a political threat insurance or a kind of a detention insurance, which is something you don't get on most cards.
Yeah. I know. They things are a little
turn
on the news, okay. See what's going on out there. Protects you 150 miles or more from your home. Includes domestic, international travel. MedJet Horizon members also membership, I should say, also includes travel security and crisis response. As we're saying, political threats, hijacking, wrongful detention, disappearance, all that stuff. So pack peace of mind for your next trip. Let's get MedJet Assist. Gary.
Right now, MedJet is offering our listeners a special deal. Receive up to $50 off an annual membership when you go to MedJet.com/impact and enter code DOUBT. Annual memberships start at $270 and you can save up to $50. That's MedJet.com/impact and enter promo code DOUBT.
So this is what I was thinking this week. There was two things that provoked this thought. One was James Comey, when he testified, the FBI director, was saying that it's part of the FBI's job to vet people when they're coming here. And, you know, you've heard everybody's heard the Trump wanted to extreme vetting and things like that. Comey was saying, you know, one of the things that is a challenge for them is that in order to vet, and when I say them, the FBI or whoever's doing it, if it's DHS, the Department of Homeland Security or ICE, one of the things that they want is they want to have cooperation with the country from which the person is coming, because it's very difficult to do any kind of vetting when you're on this side of the fence, pun intended.
Right.
So that when you, if you don't have the diplomatic relationships and if you don't have the law enforcement symbiotic relationship, how do you do extreme vetting with a country where you just don't know? And I what led me to believe this, because I've had every time Chris Brown, for instance, goes on tour, I have to check the countries. I have to figure out which country he can get into because of whatever, you know, he's got two convictions, one out of D.C. and one out of here in L.A., although the D.C. was a misdemeanor. And you have to check, I have to check each country, figure out with that country, find out exactly what they will allow in, what they won't allow in. And I will tell you that one of the two toughest places to get somebody into from America, if you've got any kind of conviction, I think would be the last two you'd think of would be England or Canada. Canada, a mere misdemeanor. I've had clients, you know, Chris notwithstanding, I've had clients with DUIs who Canada has given pushback on letting you get in. I mean, if you can believe that.
Anybody who's traveled to Canada can tell you that their security is sort of bizarrely rigid and rude.
Right.
I have been...
The border security.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have been rousted many times just going into Canada to do a show in Toronto, pulled aside, asked to sit in a room. I mean, pulled out of a line, sat in a room. Sort of what, basically a kind of version of, we're going to take you and everyone you're traveling with, we're going to spread them out, we're going to put them in separate rooms, we're going to give them the stink eye, we're going to waste about 20 minutes or half hour of their day, and then we're going to let you go. By the way, you always know, one thing I figured out with Canada and all airport security or any computer, as soon as they say to you, you know, you can be in a lot of trouble, you're in no trouble at all.
Right.
If they offer you a cigarette or a Fresca and say nothing about being in trouble, then you are in trouble. If you're actually in trouble, they don't tell you you're in trouble.
Now, why is it, though? Because I think everybody who's ever traveled to Canada can anecdotally at least say, yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, it's not easy. You go in and go out. It's not like Mexico. It's not like going to Europe. I mean, you fly into France, it seems to me to be a lot easier, a lot less hassle.
A lot easier.
Yeah. So why is it, though, that we have such a collective kind of embrace of Canada, and that's like our utopia in terms of they're so laid back. You know what I mean? I mean,
Canada is it's sort of like it's the cockroach versus the ladybug. Sorry for the unfortunate
representation
of the nature.
I was going to do it in terms of relatives.
No,
like your Aunt Gloria versus your Aunt Gertrude. But
I'm telling you, you have Trudeau, you have Mounties on horses.
Right.
You have this sort of great sort of, hey, you know, hey, Ozer,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Have a beer kind of thing. You have this illusion of a laid back,
right,
easy, nobody right wants to tilt a beer and watch a hockey game.
Right. If Trump gets elected, I'm moving to Canada. How many times did
right,
you hear that?
Right. Right. But the reality is they're very stringent about who's coming and who's going.
Right.
They quietly don't like Americans that much because I feel like we're just slightly more successful versions of them, whereas Mexico doesn't look at us. We're in different categories. They don't look at us as a threat, you know.
Right.
Canada does. And they're super douchey when you come in and out, and it's happened way more than once to me. So it's funny because we use Canada all the time as this example. They have universal
healthcare.
They have this. They have that. Well, in terms of, I don't, I don't know how their sanctuary cities work over there, but they I don't think they allow much of that activity of people flowing in willy-nilly and setting up shop there.
I was going to say, my experience is, at least with coming from the perspective of people trying to get in or get out, and the, from an immigration, purely immigration, is that they are one of the toughest countries around. I mean, they really are. And that they literally, I have gone to the point, my experience is based on, in full disclosure, hiring lawyers there to give me an opinion on, you know, this conviction or that conviction, and having to jump through all kinds of hoops and doing the same thing and to get somebody into London
well,
to perform.
So just as we bring it around here, what is – so I have a sort of simple take, which is the feds have laws and they involve immigration – and they're kind of on the books, and it is a federal issue because people, once they get into the country, can travel about freely. It's also sort of a no shit, Sherlock. Like if a guy is here illegally, and then is involved with a crime other than being here illegally,
right?
I'd like him not to be part of the group that lives in this country. I'd like him just put back to wherever he or she came from. So I don't get it. But
well,
how's this thing going to end?
And this isn't zero tolerance, or at least it isn't yet. There is a whole body of law, well developed body of law, as to what crimes are deportable or excludable. There is a whole body of law that drills down to the individual crime. I mean, literally, there are cases in the Ninth Circuit where you can look at, you know, resisting arrest. You can look at a first degree versus commercial burglary. You can look at, and they go through and they analyze this. And so somebody gets quite a bit of due process before you are sent away or before you are, and there are safety valve type.
Sure.
Things that are they're built into it. It is not as uniformly draconian, I think, although you do hear the stories. I mean, you always hear the parade of horribles.
There has to be – when there's a story where somebody says – when there's a procedure or a mandate or, you know, the guy who owns the cookie factory says, look – you need to inspect every cookie that comes down that conveyor belt. There's 10,000 cookies an hour that comes down. Any ones that are chipped or broken have to go into the hopper. We're going to break those down and reuse them or feed them to goats or whatever it is. Right. Only whole, pristine cookies go into the 10-pack. Of course, somebody's going to tell you a story where they opened up some Oreos in the 10-pack and one of them was broken,
right,
or it had a chip in it, because it's mathematically – basically mathematically impossible for that not to happen.
Correct.
Now, if you own Nabisco and that only happens a handful of times, you're doing really well for yourself. And so when they say these stories where it's like, oh, yeah, there was a mom out of Plentywood, Montana. She was a housewife and she worked and she had her papers in order and the feds banged on her door and she answered in her bathrobe and they forced her to sit on the sofa with her hands behind her back until she could produce it. Of course that shit is going to happen. It can't not happen.
Exactly.
It can't not happen. It has to happen. But all you pussies are going to wave that out in front of me and expect me to go, oh, Jesus, good Lord. If just one housewife is detained for 20 minutes in her housecoat, well, then you're right. It should all be removed. Are you fucking high? It's like saying there was a plane crash 2 years ago. No more plane flights.
Well, like, and there's redress. That's what bothers me. It bothers me on two levels. Number one, there's redress for that housewife for the detention.
What's redress?
Redress. She's got a way, not with the house coat, mm-hmm, but she's got the ability to sue if she believes she was wronged, and she should be able to collect whatever damages that a jury thinks. So that's what you've got. You've got that ability. God forbid you're in some other country, you don't have that ability. So that is, to my mind, that's your safety valve, you know, and that's what you do. You do not say we're going to take away police powers. You don't say, right? You don't say we're going to eliminate the ability to execute warrants. You do say, however, and this is kind of where it's so bizarre how often I agree with Scalia, because on social issues we didn't, but when it came to the law, you know, he was ahead of his time in so many ways. He would say that very same thing. I mean, his idea was, is you got a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We don't eliminate, you know, the Fourth Amendment. We don't throw it out. We don't make it more stringent. What you've got the redress. You've got a remedy. Your remedy is to sue and collect damages if some lawyer wants to do it. And then this is the other thing. If the lawyer doesn't think, if you can't find a lawyer to take the case, you know what that might mean to you? Might mean that maybe you're overreacting.
And also, I always look at it this way, too. Politically, what is in it for us to take the hardworking, tax-paying, law-abiding mother of three and drop her off in a burlap sack in Tijuana? A, it's really bad publicity for us and whatever politician championed that. And then B, we just pulled a law-abiding taxpayer off the books.
Right.
So when there's nothing in it for us, usually we're not that motivated. Doesn't mean there's not mistakes. It just means we're not that motivated. All this story about the sky is falling with the what happens if the grandfather is walking with his grandchildren to the ice cream store and they hit him with the butterfly net and throw him in the back of the paddy wagon and drop him off in El Salvador. Like, I don't feel like it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, well, and if it does, you know what? Then go to the media, let it get some attention, and guess what? Usually the transparency or the light of day, that's another great thing. The light of day will correct it or stop them in their tracks. But I've got one more thing to say.
Yes.
Blue Apron, they're back.
Oh, the best.
Right? Fresh, high-quality ingredients, less than $10 a meal. You can't get – I've been on the road for – I can't – if I get away – from a meal on the road for less than $150, I feel like I've scored. Here you get it for less
seven martinis at $9 a piece.
I mean, right there.
Right there.
They've got new recipes created each week. They don't repeat within a year. That's unbelievable when you think about it. It takes 40 minutes or less. I spend that much time in the bar waiting for the table. Upcoming meals are spinach and mozzarella pizza with olive, pepper, and ricotta salad. Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine, sweet and sour salmon, and they've got delivery options that fit your needs. No weekly commitment. Just get what you want. That's, you know, it's kind of like our sponsor here. Our litmus test is you just pay for what you want.
They
meet it. And they check out this week's menu, and you get three meals free with free shipping. BlueApron.com/doubt. That's BlueApron.com/doubt, Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
All right. If you want to see me and Dennis Prager, hear me and Dennis Prager, you can go online and check that out at No Safe Spaces. Go to AdamCarolla.com for that. Live shows and cruises and what have you, AdamCarolla.com. The Spike Show, if you want to come out in the audience, go out there. Or go to Carolla Questions at Gmail.
Quite a buzz about the Spike Show.
Love that. Right. Say hi to Lynette over at Carolla Drinks. She's doing her due diligence over there and having a great time. Us, we're doing our Reasonable Doubt Town Hall. 10E, downtown L.A. That's Thursday, July 20th. It's going to sell out, so get those
tickets.
Yeah, it
will sell out. We've already gotten quite a good response, so buy them now.
And the 24-hour war, chassis, everything's over at chassis with two S's and a Y. Mark, what do you got?
I got V Palm Springs. Get down there. Gary will back me up on it. It's outstanding. You can't wait to go back. We've got Capri opening up next month in the Hamptons. Casa Tropicana is open right now on the beach in San Clemente. And Engine Company 28, comfort food extraordinaire.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Carolla Digital.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.